Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 77. My name is John. I put my faith in the people, but the people let me down. So I turn the other way, and I carry on anyhow. People are seriously starting to question how much sanity is left in this world. Oscar Wilde said in one of my all-time favorite quotes, "We are each our own devil, and we make this world our hell." I've been wondering lately if humanity's sick insistence on promoting collectivism is combining and amplifying all of those hells into one fantastic shitstorm that seems to be spreading across the earth. Fact is, I could go through all kinds of atrocities that have been happening over the world in recent months. The reasoning, or lack thereof, and causes of these atrocities are for another podcast, because it's not an easy answer to explain, nor is it an easy answer for a lot of people to accept and digest. For now, I want to talk about the shooting at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando in June. There are no words to properly convey the senseless injustice of this horrific act. Last night, Gina and I went to a friend's birthday party at a popular bar a few miles away. Drinks flowed freely. Music blared throughout the building. The dance floor shook with joy and abandon. People were having a good time. I sit my Shinerbach at the end of the table, looking around the place, and I noticed a few burly security guards watching over everything. And suddenly my mind flashed, what if some sick, crazed motherfucker decided to target this place? I was sitting in the line aside of the front door, making me one of the first targets. Gina's right next to me. Would I see the attacker in enough time to shield her? Then I remembered the movie Breakfast on Pluto, and I wondered, what if it's not a rifle attack, but a bomb? That's just how my mind works, flashing through multiple scenarios. Gina's gotten used to it, I think. The thing is, I can't imagine the horror that happened at Pulse. And I don't ever want to have to go through something like that. So I couldn't begin to know what went through the minds of the victims, nor how the survivors are dealing with the trauma. And it's especially painful that it happened in my country, where we've taken such positive steps in respecting how others wish to live their lives. I mean, if you think about it, it was less than 50 years ago when a police force tasked with enforcing the government's version of morality raided the Stonewall Hotel that sparked riots and became the springboard for the modern gay rights movement. Since then, we are slowly but surely moving past the oppressive puritanical attitudes. But there's still more to go. Oh no, he's not going to go on another rant about gay rights, is he? Yep. Oh, great. He's going to repeat a lot from his previous podcast, isn't he? Yep. Any way to talk him out of this? Nope. Look, just stick with me on this, okay? Yes, it may be a lot of what I said in the past, but it needs to be said. If you're driving or doing something where you shouldn't be distracted, maybe save this little exercise for later. In fact, here's what I would like for you to do. I would like for you to go to some place with a lot of people around. People you don't know. So head out to a park or a mall or whatnot. Once you get there, find a nice contemplative spot. Ideally, you're sitting alone, but in full view of lots of other people. Are you there? Good. Now, clear your mind and answer this question. What freedoms do you need? No, this is not a rhetorical question. I want you to take a moment, evaluate your life, and ask yourself what freedoms you want for yourself. Hell, you can even pause this for a minute and ponder it. Take however long you need. Think about the life you want to live, the happiness you want to pursue, and which natural rights you will need to exercise to make that happen. Okay? You have that in your mind? Good. Now hold that thought and look around you. And find a stranger. Pick anybody you want. Now, think about that stranger and answer this question. Which freedoms does that person need? Which natural rights does that person require in order to pursue his or her happiness? I'm hoping that the first thought that comes to your head is some variation of, how the fuck should I know? Because that really is the correct answer. You can only answer that question for yourself. You cannot answer it for anyone else. I cannot answer it for you. I can only answer it for me. So, let me ask you again, which natural rights do you require that will allow you to pursue what will make you happy? Okay, well, what are natural rights? Well, that's kind of difficult because it is by its very nature a purposely vague concept. A natural right is liberty which is granted to you simply because you exist. Oh, thanks, John, that really helps. I know. Now you see what I mean by purposely vague. A natural right is something that you can do on your own or with consenting associates that does not violate the life or liberty of others nor puts them in involuntary peril. Still not helping much, John. Okay, let me try this. A natural right is anything that you ought to be allowed to do that doesn't prohibit someone from exercising an equal action, nor does it infringe or force someone to do something they do not wish to do. For example, I may say, I want to be allowed to smoke marijuana in my house. I have the natural right to do with my body as I please. So yes, that is a natural right. But then I say that if I have some kind of negative reaction to the drugs that I take, I want you to pay for my medical bills. No, that is not a natural right. You cannot force someone else to pay for the consequences of your actions. Well, but if everybody pays their taxes, then we can pay for everybody's health care. No. My taxes come from my labor. To take my earnings by force of government, without my permission, and give it to somebody else who did not earn it, is wrong. It doesn't matter how noble or righteous you believe your cause to be. Good enough explanation of natural rights for now? I hope so, because I'm moving forward. Is it a natural right for you to associate with other consenting adults? I know, the word consenting usually carries some kind of sexual connotation. For the purposes of this monologue, who cares? Can two or more people hang out with each other if they want? Of course they can. People spending time together doesn't affect anybody else, so that's a natural right. Wait, are you sure? Because not every nation allows people to freely associate with each other. And when we in America see that, it's strange to us that some governments force people to stay away from each other because we take that natural right of free association for granted. Is it a natural right for two or more people to enter into a private contract with one another? Again, this is so commonplace in our society that we take it for granted. If my neighbor sees me mowing my yard one morning and shouts, "Hey John, I need to mow my lawn too, but I'm getting ready to leave for the week. Will you mow my lawn for me? I'll pay you $20. "Sure, I'll mow your lawn for you." Probably won't even take the money, but for the purposes of this monologue, I take the $20 and I start to mow his lawn as he leaves for the airport. That is an example of the natural right to private contract between persons that we are allowed to exercise simply because we exist. Now, if I say to another person, "I really like you, and I want you to live in my house with me, and I would like, when we both agree, to be physically intimate with you." The right to free association. Then I say, "Not only do I want you to live with me, but I also want to share all my possessions with you. And if I die, I want you to have everything I own." The right to a private contract. Am I exercising my natural rights? Yes. Am I affecting anyone outside the relationship? No. Since I'm not affecting anyone outside the relationship, do those on the outside have any claim to affect the relationship in any way? Absolutely not. So, if I'm exercising my natural rights with my partner or partners, what does it matter what our genders are? Who are you to tell me whom I can associate with? Who are you to dictate the terms of my private contract with other people? Go back to that stranger who you were looking at earlier. You don't know what natural rights are important to him or her. He or she certainly does not know what natural rights are important to you. Now, what if that stranger, who knows nothing about you, is given the power to dictate which rights you may and may not have? What if that person, based on their moral code, decides that you're only allowed half the rights that you want as an otherwise free person? You would and should rightfully be angry. Why does somebody else get to dictate how I live my life? And now you know the crux of the bitterness that perpetuates our society every time one group uses the government to force its morality on others. And now you know why it's so important to fight for the rights of everyone, even for rights you don't need, or the rights for somebody to live their life in a way that you don't agree with. But anger begets anger, and hatred begets hatred. Fear, atrocities, and persecution have rightfully made the LGBT community wary and angry toward the religious community. So while a radical Muslim committed this particular atrocity, there's not only a backlash against Muslims in general, There has even been a backlash at Christians who, even though most denominations are vocally against homosexuality, offered their sympathies to the victims. Look, there's a lot of bad religious people out there. I've chronicled my life on both sides of the fence at length in this podcast. I know sneers and derogatory remarks from both sides. And believe me, it comes from both sides. And yes, Christians are their own worst enemy. They hypocritically preach love and tolerance while showing blatant intolerance toward any lifestyle or creed that falls outside their narrow vision. Regardless of how the general group promotes their beliefs, the vast majority may dislike the homosexual lifestyle, but they don't wish death. So when an earnest Christian hears about a horrible thing that happens at a gay club in Orlando, and they are powerless to affect the situation and unable to provide any immediate physical assistance, they offer the only thing they know they can: their prayers. I quote Andy Levy, "Prayer isn't my thing, but that's okay. I'll take people saying thoughts and prayers over people being a-holes any day of the week." Their hearts hurt with the news of the loss. Despite any disagreement they may have that clashes with their beliefs, they set that aside to acknowledge the egregious injustice and wish the horror and the pain to somehow be eased in the lives of those affected. And in response, they get hatred and vitriol. Again, I kind of understand, but God damn it, there's an opportunity there to build a bridge, promote understanding, to offer peace. Yet we waste it because we are so dead set in the ruts of our assigned tribes. So because you're in the gay tribe, you have to spit animosity at the Christian tribe. And because you're in the Christian tribe, you have to spit animosity at the gay tribe. And everybody spits animosity at the Muslim tribe because they want to blame an entire religion for the actions of a minority of extremists. There are some beliefs that will not work within the frame of the United States Constitution or natural rights. If your religion teaches you that it's okay to kill somebody because they're homosexual, or because they don't adhere to your religion's dress code, or because they think women ought to be treated as equals, then a place that strives to practice equal rights is not the place for you. That doesn't mean you can't hate homosexuality. You can sit and seethe in the unholy coupling of two men from now until your dying breath. Go right ahead. But you cannot force people from being together if that's what they want. And by force, that means you obviously cannot pull a gun on people and make them bend to your will, but not so obviously, that also means you cannot use the government to force everyone else to bend to your definition of marriage. You cannot prevent people from following what they believe is their correct path. You may honestly and fervently believe that the life others live will result in those people finding themselves in eternal pain and torture. And hey, maybe you're right. Fuck if I know. But no matter how much you want to save their souls, you have no right to force them to conform to your morality. You may have a belief system that is sure, that if people will just live their lives by your moral code, then there will be no more wars, Dogs will stop chasing cats, and the whole world will be a giant commune where everyone sings Kumbaya, and you could always get a Coke and a motherfucking smile. But if your system is so goddamn great, then you don't need the force of a gun or the threat of a government to convince others to follow your ideal. And if you do need force or threat to get others to follow you, then you become the very evil you claim to oppose. Now, I know I'm repeating myself to drive home my point, but I'm sure a lot of people are listening to this, and they're thinking that that last paragraph was directed towards the religious right and their smug morality that they believe gives them the right to pass laws in an effort to force everybody to adhere to their morality. And you'd be right. I am definitely talking about those types of Christians. But I'm also talking about Muslims who want to force their religious laws on everyone. And I'm talking about the political collectivists who think they have the right to force me to pay for their health care or their education. And I'm talking about the social collectivists who think they can pass a law to silence religious expression. You see, not all religious people want to keep you from living your life as you see fit. I grew up in a fundamental Christian household, or at least my parents tried to do that. The church we went to was like a collection of the town elders from Footloose. Any sex outside of marriage was bad, which is, you know, common throughout Christianity. And marriage was for producing children. Dancing and alcohol were strictly forbidden. Only certain card games were acceptable. Hearts was okay, but poker was evil. And my mother was, and still is, a very devout Christian. So I was sweating bullets when I came out of the closet as bisexual. She was so devout, I had to explain what bisexual meant because she'd never heard the word before. But after I explained it to her, she grabbed me and hugged me tighter than she ever did in my adult life. And she told me that she loved me no matter what. That's not to say that she approves of it, but she still loves me and wants me to be happy. I'm not going to delude you or myself by saying that most Christians are like that, because I would bet that for every story like mine, there's probably 10 stories of coming out to Christian parents that do not end happily at all. But what I'm saying is that you cannot condemn them all when there's even one example that contradicts your claim. Lumping together all followers of a religion as evil because of the actions of a few is just another form of bigotry. After all this time, are we still that fearful of what we do not understand? Unfortunately, yes. And the fear comes not only from the ignorance of ideas, but ignorance of objects as well. Because you see, in a free society, you must have the right to defend yourself from whatever threat you perceive. Now understand, I have selected my phrasing very carefully. To me, there are two key words in that sentence. The first key word is defend. You have weapons in order to defend yourself, your property, and anyone with whom you have an agreement to defend. Most likely, that would be your family. But again, defend means that you're trying to deter or even prevent an overt act of aggression. You do not have the right to use your weapons offensively. That sounds like it should be obvious, doesn't it? The problem is, I really don't think anti-gun advocates understand that. For some reason, they believe the weapon itself is the problem, It's not. Guns, or weapons in general, in the hands of rational people who can use them as they are meant to be used, are the solution. Banning people's ability to defend themselves the way they choose only makes them targets. We've had many such tragedies lately, haven't we? If you go back and listen to one of my previous podcasts I released after the Sandy Hook tragedy, I made a similar point, but I want to mention it again to drive this home. Vice President Biden went off about the current gun laws that he blamed for the school shootings and opined about how many more people have to die before we realize more gun bans are necessary. No one was allowed to have a gun on school grounds. It was against the law. The law, which people like Vice President Joe Biden support, prevented responsible adults from defending themselves and the children of that school. How many more people will we leave defenseless and allow mentally unstable predators to slaughter with our gun-free zones? How many, Vice President Biden? How many, President Obama? How many, Hillary, Bernie, and all you other myopic fearmongers? True or false, government made the Pulse nightclub a gun-free zone. True. As an aside, as I've said many times before, if a business owner wants to ban guns, that's a different story, because that's a private business making a personal decision. The government forcing the decision is the matter I'm talking about. In a free society, you must have the right to defend yourself from whatever threat you perceive. The second key word in that sentence is perceive. I don't know what you think is a threat. I do know some people who expect someday to see government forces coming down the street. I know a lot of other people who thoroughly trust the government, if their party is the one in power, at least. Maybe the only threat you perceive is from potential burglary, so you keep a gun in a lockbox in your closet. Maybe you put your faith in an alarm system. Regardless, it's what you think the threat is. You have to decide what is and what is not important. You must not be prevented from exercising your right to defend yourself. Now, I've talked about your natural right to free association and private contract. In other words, I've talked about your right to love who you want to love. I've talked about your right to believe what you believe and peacefully express that belief, your religious freedom. I've talked about your right to defend yourself from whatever threat you perceive. And I've only scratched the surface of what your natural rights are. There are many more, and they must be expressed and protected before we can honestly say we are in a free society. But neither the Democrats nor the Republicans want you to be truly free. Each one wants to dictate which rights they think you should have based on their moral code. Both parties want to limit your natural rights. The Democrats and their disciples don't care if you lose some of your natural rights, if it means they get more votes and build their power. The Republicans and their zealots don't care if you lose some of your natural rights, so long as they get more votes to regain their power. And I've heard the cancerous rhetoric. I've heard it in the media. I overhear it in conversations at tables next to mine in restaurants. I hear it in acquaintances and read it in my social media. If I don't vote for one big party candidate, I'm a misogynist. If I don't vote for the other big party candidate, I'm un-American. I tell you right now, I reject such hateful myopia. I don't believe in casting my vote based on a person's gender, or race for that matter. I don't believe in casting my vote based on blind jingoism. I used to do that because I thought you had to vote for one of the other big government parties or else you wasted your vote. I used to vote for the lesser of two evils. And sure enough, evil always won. Then I woke up. I don't believe in voting for my freedom at the expense of others. I believe in voting for freedom for everyone, regardless of whether or not I personally agree with how they live their life. If I vote for the Republicans or the Democrats, I waste my vote because they do not represent my desire for freedom for everyone. A wasted vote comes when anyone sacrifices his or her personal beliefs in favor of a hollow victory for a political party that only cares about gaining and retaining power. If you've had enough of the hate-mongering, enough of the fear-mongering, if you want to build freedom instead of bureaucracy, then this is the year to reject the big government duopoly. If you believe in the natural rights of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and any other gender identity, to live and love with other consenting adults, and if you believe in the natural rights of Muslims, Christians, and all other faiths to peacefully express their beliefs, and if you believe in the natural rights of people to defend themselves as they see fit from whatever threats they perceive, and if you believe people should be able to live their lives how they want, without others forcing their morality on anyone, then it's time to reject the Republicans. And it's time to reject the Democrats. It's time for a new era of freedom in the United States of America. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.